morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Last night, I had a long telephone conversation with Janet Keim for the first time since my economic exile from Astoria nearly 4 years ago. So I dedicate today's radio rant to her, the once upon a time bug lady of Clatsop County and downtown Astoria guardian and caretaker. I start today's rant with something I've written, The First Freedom. And I begin it with a quote by James Alexander, who wrote this in 1737. Freedom of speech is a principal pillar in a free government. When this support is taken away, the Constitution is dissolved and tyranny is erected on its ruins. The first newspaper published in the American colonies hit the streets of Boston on September 25th, 1690. But it was soon suppressed because of unkind remarks about the British crown. 45 years later, in 1735, John Peter Zenger was put on trial and acquitted for defamation against the English king in his newspaper, the New York Weekly Journal, which raised issues of a free press that contributed directly to the First Amendment to the United States Constitution half a century later. 30 more years after Zenger's trial passed before Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, which inflamed the American Revolution, then in progress, and later he wrote Rights of Man, which was made the rationale of the French Revolution. 2 years after the Bastille was stormed in 1789, the Bill of Rights, something almost an afterthought tacked onto the American Constitution, as its first 10 amendments, were adopted into law as the most basic rights of the common citizenry of a quite turbulent new nation that declared itself a democracy. The First Amendment guarantees the freedom of speech and a free press in the assumption that liberty survives only in an atmosphere of free and open expression of thought and opinion, no matter how diverse or uncomfortable. Controversy is, in fact, the language of democracy, yet those who govern in the name of democracy continually attempt to limit the range of ideas and information necessary to engage in the arguments of opinion indispensable to political and personal freedom. And worse, they quite often print lies, as well as fabricating falsehoods. Censorship of opinion and expression has always been a tool of oppression. The tendency of government is to rule, and despite homage to the contrary, it is a parasite. It must, by the very nature of implied authority, feed upon and subtract the political rights and liberties of those it rules. The assumption of political and personal freedom is that the average human being is intelligent and inspired by compassion, and that most people will think and act reasonably most of the time. That assumption is in general conflict with the darker maxim of rigid authority, that the common citizenry is unintelligent, primitive, and lawlessly brutal, and must be domineered and suppressed. Freedom and dominance are in direct conflict, and freedom of expression is especially at risk of repossession. A workable definition must be made of open and free dialogue and use of information and what purposes these serve, whether it is a public dialogue and serves as a necessary function of an open society, or whether it should be privately controlled to reflect only certain ideas and points of reference. The First Amendment answers unequivocally. No law shall be made that abridges freedom of speech or publication, or for that matter, deny the right of the people to peacefully assemble and dissent, nor can the right of free religion or none, or redress of grievances be tampered with. The purpose of a free press, or media, as it is now commonly lumped term, is little understood, which is as much the fault of media as it is a primetime lack of public consciousness. The people expect event and spectacle, which are ardently produced, but the main function of the info part of attainment, is to act as the public's critical watchdog, the cry of alarm when authority is exceeded, abused, or corrupt. The media must be free to present differing opinions and arguments, act as a forum of dialogue and debate. Above all, whatever its varied points of view, it must be honest and open with its readers, listeners, viewers, and more recently, its digital media subscribers and users. Yet no one should be surprised that a government does not encourage liberty or independent opinion among its subjects. Democracies are simply elaborate and quite often fierce power balances between classes, factions, and ruling cliques. A fundamental assumption of a democracy is that the flow of public information should not be infringed or adulterated. But of course, interfering with and manipulating information is among the prime priorities of political power. This assumption is based on a generally accurate premise that a populace will not give much thought to mind control efforts most of the time. The First Amendment has not prevented attempts to impose religious or political orthodoxy in this country. The excessive repression of the McCarthy era ruined the lives of the nation's best writers. Christian fundamentalists have been crusading to ban books from schools and public libraries for decades, and other censorious groups demand control over the contents of school textbooks and the suppression of everything from evolution to Mother Goose. The persistent efforts by powerful elites to control public dialogue, particularly in matters of social behavior and political activity, have always been dangerous and generally the guise for authoritarian usurpation of the apparatus of public communication. The so-called information highway is plastic, fluid, still unpredictable despite corporate, governmental, and political invasion of its previously wide-open cyberspaces. But the pervasive ambitions of monopoly and partisan control are felt and reverberate through electronic and digital networks. The concentration of ownership of the media is ominous and significant cause for mistrust and paranoia. Huge conglomerates own and manipulate information that is increasingly vital for personal and collective survival. Info breeds info, while simultaneously producing mediocrity. Power in the New World capitalist order has rapidly shifted to control and manipulation of the immense flow of information, up until recently an essential resource, but now the treasure of Midas. It is this which confounds the believers of unvexed information as the temple of freedom. Public apathy is not accidental or the result of having little or non-direct access to media. To the contrary, most Americans have passively accommodated outrageous commercial falsehoods that have corrosively inhibited the national capacity to recognize or critically evaluate truth. At some point, language is obscured, transposed from communication to promotion and spin, from clarification to obfuscation and manipulation. Truth is not necessary, only the appearance of truth or truthiness, adhering to basic principles of advertising. If a lie is told often enough by enough people, it is accepted as truth. Agreed upon fictions masqueraded as reality to distort and co-opt circumstances and are eventually recorded as historical truth. The American people are awash in media, and to call through the immensities of twaddle and drivel to discern what is pertinent or work through the purposely misleading might finally be too much to require or expect of a citizen. Suppression, after all, fires the wronged spirit. Gluttony entombs it. And it is egregiously myopic to think that only so-called mainstream media approaches to public issues are to be considered. Esoteric media, left or right, shrill or reasonable, contrast mass media by appealing to more specialized clientele. Yet, a significant trend in media traffic is, paradoxically, segmenting into selective user groups that become hermetically sealed by thinly appropriate media. Defining journalism is a slippery trope, not least from contradictions derived from the impossible quest for objective truth, which is always problematical at best, a deceptive masquerade at its most contemptible. Objectivity in reportage is a fine ideal, but human beings who record events, or as Gene Fowler called it, those who shoot history on the wing, are creatures of their cultural biases, classes, and education, and their attempts at unbiased witness are yet shaped by conscious or unconscious prejudices and inculcated values. Human minds are not autonomic. They are colored with imagination and point of view, which is synonymous with angle of reference. An insidious aspect of objectivity is that inevitably the form is perverted to disguise very partisan ideas and perspectives, most notably by those who manage and presume to rule public opinion. The partisan media is at least open about what it represents and the axes it grinds. In the bad old days when the mainstream print media was unabashedly partisan, readers were exposed to a vigorous variety of ideas and opinion. For all its renowned excesses, prejudice, and hysteria, the old-time pork-barrel partisan press was in thunderous opposition with itself, while under the rubric of objectivity, today's media cautiously imitates itself. But that is also changing with the rise of electronic media, which is creating flagrantly reckless and often unsavory partisanship. The seemingly nonpartisan concept of objectivity might itself be regarded as a partisan-style conspiracy for projecting a rigorous status quo that disavows dissent and free expression as dangerous or naive partisanship. Dissent in particular is the most definitive and precarious form of free expression, and is in the current fetid atmosphere of bellicose Trumpism is inferred to be treasonous. The mainstream media is branded as an enemy of the people and as fake news by Trump and his despicables, whose fervent desire is to eviscerate the First Amendment and suppress civil liberties. Fox News is proclaimed to be the state media in the Stalinesque sense of Pravda. Trump's antipathy toward American print and broadcast media has had a contrary reaction by inspiring it to fight back against his oppressive purge, and nothing makes a blustering narcissist bully more enraged than being hit back, which is of course attributed to disloyalty, even treachery. Last month, more than 300 media companies threw down the gauntlet to challenge Trump's obsessive intent to destroy First Amendment freedoms, which he demeaned as collusion. As a bit of irony, the Fourth Estate result... As a bit of irony, the Fourth Estate revolt was instigated by the Boston Globe, the city in which America's first newspaper began its short life in 1690. A newspaper I published, the North Coast Times-Eagle, is also deceased 11 years ago. But as a Raggedy Ann member of the Poverty Press, it had a pretty long run for its ilk, just short of 30 years. So now I turn to zombie journalism, because I would like to add the Times Eagle's first editorial to the list of newspapers who spelled out their credos in their dissent to Trump's accusations of fake news and his blatant denunciation of all American media, with exception of right-wing and Russian bots, as enemies of the people. This from a psychopathic liar who has been clocked at 5,000 plus lies or more than half a dozen trumped up fabrications daily since he took the presidential oath to uphold the Constitution and to always be truthful to the American people. I wrote this for the July 20th, 1979 Times Eagle, my first issue of the Born Again Bird, which I resurrected from its first demise. First Amendment newspapers have become as rare as a nation's symbol, the bald eagle. The independent press has virtually disappeared, homogenized into the huge corporations that also control the country and probably the world. In this age of the great systems, devotion to any principle other than perpetuation of the status quo seems quaint and naive and faintly dangerous. Yet even the most random demographic of this wild and stormy Oregon coast would show that loyalty to the metallic demands of the corporate structure is not a prime aspiration of its inhabitants. To the contrary, this rare splinter of sand between mountains and ocean has traditionally served as a refuge for those seeking the fundamental freedoms guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. Men and women of all ages and preoccupations who have immigrated here or who have remained here demand personal control over their own lives. But even that has come into conflict. The enormous pressures of population and economics threaten the way we live. The great contradictions between freedom and property have finally reached us. Like everything else, the role of the press is in question. There should be no doubt. The press should represent no other special interest than the First Amendment. This becomes patently impossible when the press is controlled by the corporations whose interests are often in conflict with the Constitution. The renegade newsman A.J. Liebling once said that of course the press was free to whoever owned one. We live in an increasingly nasty time. The petroleum age races to its end. Inflation and recession tumble over each other. The country crawls with greed and corruption. Perhaps the war to end wars will occur soon. Even the world's weather is grim. And that was my first editorial for the North Coast Times-Eagle on July 20th, 1979. And I would like to add it as a zombie, I guess you might say, to the other credos of more than 300 newspapers disputing Donald Trump and his lies, which now is the basis of another thing I wish to read, and it is from Mother Jones and was written by Denise Clifton. We just got it this morning, so I read it quickly once, and I will now read it a little more selectively, or I should say carefully. Now, Trump's lies have grown far more frequent and more dangerous. The president is accelerating a dark phenomenon called truth decay. In recent months, the steady stream became a deluge. Although Washington Post journalists and other fact-checkers have dutifully documented President Donald Trump's now more than 5,000 misleading statements and outright lies, the American public may no longer pay much attention to the exhausting flood of misinformation. Now, a book-length study from the nonpartisan Rand Corporation warns that a growing disregard for basic facts could have dire long-term consequences for American democracy. From June through August, Trump averaged more than 15 bogus statements a day, more than triple his daily rate in 2017. Recently, he went after Google, falsely claiming the country's biggest information search tool is rigged to make him look bad. He sowed confusion over a key statement he made about the Russian investigation, falsely accusing NBC News of doctoring video of his famous interview with Lester Holt, which has been publicly available in full since May 2017. And in his startling rebuke of an official government commissioned report concluding that 2,975 people in Puerto Rico died in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, Trump falsely claimed that the report was a Democratic hit job and that the toll, quote, did not go up by much, unquote, beyond 6 to 18 deaths. This unprecedented behavior from a U.S. president is akin to dumping gasoline on a long smoldering trend Rand researchers call truth decay, a deepening disagreement over basic facts that is increasingly undercutting the fundamentals of our democracy from elections to policymaking. Even Trump's personal lawyer makes the argument that truth isn't truth. The purpose of the Rand report is to better identify the problem and lay groundwork for confronting it. Jennifer Kavanaugh, a Rand researcher, warns we should expect truth decay to get worse if we do nothing about it. Indeed, President Trump's daily drumbeat of lies and false statements marks an accelerating crisis. A year ago, when Trump was averaging around 4 to 0.6 false statements a day. A Mother Jones analysis showed how his ongoing information warfare tracked closely with another RAND study on propaganda strategies used in Russia under Vladimir Putin. That 2016 RAND study, Fire Hose of Falsehood, detailed 4 key characteristics, all of which Trump continues to demonstrate. High volume and multi-channel. From June to the end of August, Trump made 1,451 false and misleading statements in tweets, at news conferences, and at campaign rallies, according to the Washington Post. On September 7th alone, the Post counted 125 false claims, a new single-day record. Rapid, continuous, and repetitive. The president frequently repeats false claims, particularly regarding the economy and immigration. On the economy and fiscal policy, we signed the biggest package of tax cuts and tax reforms in history. On immigration, we've already started the wall 40 times just on the wall, including on August 31st. On the Mueller investigation, Russian collusion was just an excuse by the Democrats for having lost the election. And he said that 137 times on collusion, including September 12th. Lacks commitment to objective reality. When Customs and Border Patrol began separating more than 2,000 children from their immigrant parents at the southwest border last spring, Trump pushed seemingly explosive numbers to justify the new policy. There's been a 325% increase in minors and a 435% increase in the smuggling or attempted smuggling of families and minors into our country. That was highly misleading. Federal data show that illegal border crossings are near the lowest levels in 4 decades. Lacks commitment to consistency. As national outcry over the family separations policy grew this summer, the president and other administration officials changed their story on the nature of the policy 14 times before Trump signed an executive order ending it. Immigration, Trump's signature issue as he sought the presidency, is also one of the topics he lies about the most, accounting for at least 610 of the more than 5,000 recorded in the Post database so far. Ms. Kavanaugh sees this divisive issue as revealing of how truth decay corrodes American political discourse. One stark example of how agreement on fundamental fact has been lost. Gallup reports that almost half of Americans believe immigrants make crime worse, despite research showing that crime stays stable or falls in areas that have growing immigrant populations. And data from the Chicago Council of Global Affairs show that over the past decade and a half, the divide between Democrats and Republicans on the issue of illegal immigration has widened dramatically. Now, Ms. Kavanaugh says, each side calls on their own versions for the facts. Social media exploited by Trump, Russian trolls, and many others to spread bogus claims and content has created a historically fertile environment for truth decay. For example, an anti-immigrant meme with the headline "Facts" has been circulating for years, spreading lies about the number of illegal immigrants who receive food stamps, welfare, and health benefits, despite efforts to quash it. PolitiFact first debunked the meme in 2012, but as it continued to circulate this summer, fact-checkers were compelled to dissect it again. Not only does false information disseminate quickly and easily, Ms. Kavanaugh says, but once it's routine, it lives there in perpetuity. 3 of the lies in the anti-immigrant meme prey on fears about crime, a theme Trump returns to repeatedly in his false statements, such as this one from August 24th. Open borders equals crime, tremendous crime. When Trump began running for president in 2015, he also tweeted a meme spreading the lie that 81% of white homicide victims are killed by blacks. In fact, FBI data showed that 82% of white homicide victims are killed by whites. The American news media long ago helped to set the stage for Trump's demagoguery on immigration. A University of Southern California study published in 2009 found that over a 27-year period, up to 86% of stories in mainstream news sources focused on illegality, even though unauthorized immigrants had never made up more than a third of the foreign-born population. This pattern of coverage would logically cause the public and policymakers to associate the influx of the foreign-born with violations of the law, disruption of social norms, and government failures, the USC report said. As truth decay deepens now, it creates opportunities for foreign actors to exacerbate the problem. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's February indictment of Russians connected to the internet research agency Troll Factory identified a Russian-operated Facebook page called Secured Borders. The IRA trolls posed as an American activist group and called immigrants freeloaders and scum, while praising Trump's stance on immigration. The page had more than 133,000 followers when it was shut down, according to the New York Times. Ms. Kavanaugh notes that the Russians don't care what our immigration policy is. They do care that it causes division. Rand's report concludes that this is a road to political paralysis, pointing out that the percentage of proposed bills that have been enacted in Congress have fallen consistently since 2003. Even in a Republican-controlled Congress, the House failed twice in June to pass bills on immigration. In this environment, attempts at compromise routinely fail. Earlier this year, Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer briefly offered to negotiate plans for the border wall Trump wants in exchange for protections for Dreamers, but the prospect of a compromise quickly fell through. Truth decay is causing many Americans to feel so alienated that they're abandoning their role in the political process, the Rand Report warns. This summer, Pew released data that's showing that in the 2016 election, 4 out of 10 eligible voters did not vote, and some groups feel more disenfranchised than others. Pew found that while overall turnout in 2016 was only slightly lower than in 2008 and similar to 2012, turnout among African-American voters dropped 7 percentage points, and there were more non-voters than voters among Latino Americans eligible to cast a vote. Rand considers its study on truth decay a foundation for further research on the problem as well as possible solutions. The researchers are gathering hard data to measure the ways truth decay now pervades American society. They are also creating a database of media literacy efforts to analyze their effectiveness, and they plan to test tactics like fact-checking and counter-messaging, which could be used to stop the spread of disinformation. The goal is ultimately to produce recommendations that lawmakers, educators, journalists, and others can use to take action. But the research underway won't identify any potential strategies until the end of 2018 at the earliest. The hope is to find effective ways to swing back toward a fact-based political discourse, Ms. Kavanaugh says. In the meantime, Trump's lies continue to flow on everything from the Russia investigation and NATO spending to the economy and immigration. And as Americans continue to bitterly disagree over what happened in the 2016 election, the next major vote looms. And that was, Trump's Lies Have Grown Far More Frequent and More Dangerous, by Denise Clifton, who is a Mother Jones contributor and covers disinformation and the Trump-Russia investigation. She was a member of the editorial team for the 2016 election project, PutinTrump.org. And this is Michael McCusker.